they're waiting our time on.
He's made that point every meeting, and they make it seem large. We're not going to, this is the thing to do. Let's wait the course for the moment.
Let me say this. Yesterday, I was frankly trying to get George Herb Dunlop to these things in the right direction. Because God knows what's right, that's but in the direction if I may go on. Of the whole route, the only two that came down in the side that I personally consider were you and Simon.
Yeah, he and I, after we each took our position, we met Stokes and they were fairly close.
Yes. Now, in the meeting today, it's fairly hard for George and for, they got to burn all their old speeches, but my personal political mentor and their old speeches every time. Dunlop, he's been great, and he's got to do this job. I mean, there's nobody else at the present time. Your suggestion that we get John Thompson to be the top spokesman is great, but I spoke to John about a month ago, or about coming back to Stricter, he said no. And he's right. Now the idea of John stepping in here at this time appeals to me enormously. But I don't think he wants to do it in any way that is too formal, you know what I mean?
He wants to keep his options open. And he doesn't want to come down and anything will lock him.
That's right.
But could he be used on an ad hoc task basis rather than a this test basis rather than a
Howard, it seems that we're always asking and our dear friend Neil before that, but I want you to know I've had a long talk, several long talks with Bryce, and I'm just very grateful to you. We wouldn't have asked you and your company to do this, except in the things in the service of the country, and I just want you to know I'm just very grateful. I appreciate that. The only way I can repay you, I'm going to make fresh and use ivory soap and can't leave it. Fair enough.
Tell me, how's business? I hope it's good.
state of the country. And then do our very best to see that that action does not fasten on the permanent control soldier. Now, the problem with the option book that was presented to the United Lawyers yesterday was they presented the freeze option in this most stark terms, as if the freeze would be fought. First, they had the freeze applying to everything, except wages. But it was to be followed by a phase two that was unbelievable. They would control everything, whatever you use, bureaucracy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And also repeal the L4A, you make it not to be by what we did, so by presenting it in that stark term, it makes it very difficult for the student to look at it. So yesterday I said, now look, what I have in mind is a freeze. And I'm thinking basically, this is another 60-day round. If you're going to do something, you may as well. 30 looks like two, but it's second. And I said, make the freeze as narrow as possible. I said, I don't want rents in it. I don't want interest in it. I don't want profits in it. And I don't want wages. Just as far as I said, that's good. Right, and just make it there. That's 30. Second, then indicate with surety what's going to be happening, but indicate it now, not that we're going to study. Third, say that the 60-day period should be used by the Congress to do these things. Now, what should come afterwards? And I said, make it as close to phase three as you can, except in one category: food. Food is the culprit here. And in this instance, what we have to do is to find ways to international action and domestic action that will not only do something about the problem, but more than that, that will convince the people that we're trying to do something about the problem. Now, that is my approach up at this point. I wonder what yours is. If you might speak to me about it, just go off the
table. Mine is the same with one addition, that to take this freeze period and recapture the stage on which this whole discussion with the people is going on, to do everything you said subsequently, but sell hard during the 30 days, or so that, or the 60, yeah. In fact, the date I would have would be the end of July, which is about 50, I guess. But if it doesn't make any sense, Congress then goes out and organizes and so forth. But the 60 is the same, it's okay. And use that time to focus the attention back on the administration's view of things, rather than Congress's view and every pundit's view. Use that as a time so that we get up in front of conditioning the minds of this nation's public. Everybody else is out conditioning their minds, whether it's the newspapers or the Senate or everybody else. We use it to condition them as to the realities of economics to a degree, but what we're going to do in the days following, do everything you said, plus a very strong effort on that. It was the latter that I had in mind. Maybe John is the world's greatest salesman of this stuff.
Yes.
We
hope he will sell some, because he gives for the hard option.
Yeah.
I mean, he is for the...
But he'll sell a package that's put into his hands to sell to.
We'll try to get into it. Very difficult for a man outside without a portfolio,
yeah,
to go out and say, oh, I just want to make a speech about what my support is for. I think he will, but we've got to here mobilize the entire cabinet. We've got to mobilize the entire administration, and to the extent that we can, we've got to mobilize the support of the Congress for what we're doing, so that we're all, and we all must sing the same tune.
Very orchestrated program to recapture the initiative of what the program is going to be and the support of that program. I think it can be done, and I think that's the kind of a program that will do it. If it is a more temporizing program that doesn't have this short-term freeze, I think we'll never get out in front of the curve. We're still kind of fighting a rearguard action. That's the problem. The freeze, while
the reason it do come down then for a freeze of some duration is that Selling are the things we need to believe in. That economy, also, right?
That's really one reason, to make it our ballgame again, that's one reason, rather than somebody else's ballgame that we're sending in the sidelines. Second, it is an indication of, let's say, imbalance, it is an indication that we're hitting prices and, for the moment, not wages. I think we should be perceived that way, given profits and other things. It's not gonna cost business that much, they've already raised their prices in anticipation of other things. So, they're not gonna hurt.
And so they, oh, they'll contract the market down, or, differences in things, if markets, a market is acting like a child, it's gonna come back.
So we're perceived.
We're in a certain boom here.
That's a good boom.
It's gonna continue.
The market just got other factors to verify. So I would come down for a short freeze, as bad economics, but as good politics, because it allows us to make it our ballgame again, rather than having it wrestled away from our hands as it has been. And it is coming down in a way that should get a lot of public support, with more people having a lot of prices.
Stein and Schultz, that amount is more aggressive, is more reasonable, or not. Stein and Schultz create the impression that if we go to freeze route, inevitably, the science of this economy has to have a controlled economy, all through 1974, because the question is, it's a controlled economy. But first, I don't believe in that, do you think that's true?
That would work.
Don't you think that we move from the freeze of the, well, it's, I have a gut reaction, it is a gut reaction, that while there's still some strong inflationary forces, and maybe we're gonna wage push here, but I have a gut reaction that the food thing is about run its course, and it's gonna stay hot.
Stay hot.
But I think it's gonna run its course, and it's a fall comes along, because there's been issues in summer. Situation to start to improve. If it does, if the situation improves in other ways, then we just gradually get out of the business. But let me ask you, do you think it is inevitable that by going to freeze route, we are inevitably buying ourselves into the straitjacket?
I don't think that's our argument. You know, I think it takes hard work to work out, but I don't think it is inevitable, even as my memo said, I used the very word, it is not inevitable.
I know,
but we must work on it. But I think that
you and the Slammer are somewhat free then and that.
We come very close, that it is not inevitable that once we go this far, we are committed to going deeper and deeper. But it is risk, it is a problem to anticipate, and to give very special effort to work on. But I think with that anticipation and that work, we can work back out and come up close to a phase three.
And then
we'll see where we go from there.
God,
now who knows? But that's each has his own view and judgment.
Well, we start with the proposition that all of us who sit around this group do not believe in permanent controls. That's a pretty good start. Not believing in it, we have to fight it. Now, on the other hand, we have to realize that the country, because controls have worked at one point, may believe. But also, the times that reflects the country, right? I mean, despite the media and so the guys say, that Congress is going to have down here in my desk, and it'll probably pass and hang it on today. They're going to have a 90-day freeze across the board, followed by a tough phase two, and if I need to it, they'll pass over the veto. Now that's what's going to happen. We cannot let that happen. See, this is also an action to avoid something terribly worse.
Even if that has a low probability, it's still something to be avoided. If it had only a 40% probability, that's something that must be avoided.
Well, I checked in on my gut reaction to something. Well, they read the polls of all the senators and the rest of all of them, they said that they pulled off controls. So, is that proof of the controls throughout? It proves that these guys are going to reflect it.
Sure.
I know these guys up here. You see, the reason we are winning the battle on spending, right, is that about 60% of the people agree with us. Congress doesn't vote this because they're stinking. The Congress is voting this way because they're
restaurant to go. And there is a need, as I say, at least, very strong, well-planned, orchestrated program of getting the whole cabinet, getting everybody out to condition the minds of people. I think one of the ways that we proved it, and I realize there's some negatives to it, the longest battle of the budget, when those 59% of the people said they agreed with the president the way to stop inflation is to hold on government spending. They don't understand economics, but they had their minds conditioned by merely a program that was put out of here of saying it and saying it and saying it.
That's right.
And we didn't teach them a thing. We just caused them to believe that holding down spending is important. Now we have to go out and teach them part of that, not just teach them anything. Again, condition their minds to believe that the program that you're putting into effect is the good and right one. That will be reflected back to the Congress. And we're not going to educate people. We're going to condition them. We need a program for 60 days of strong conditioning, just as other programs have been on to condition. John will contribute. He can certainly condition people's minds. I had in mind, but first, most important way to do it is whatever time of yours can be used. That's the part that's going to most of all have the effect.
Well, I can use it and pull it in.
Short of your time, there needs something, needs everybody's time. And then with that, I think we can get out. We know what you can guarantee if we can get out of on the horrors of something worse than phase two was.
It's a fool game against the world. We can handle the others. Others are going to. The economy is so strong and everything is going so well. And it is beginning to the boom. And I thought the boom would go down too much anyway. I mean, we could be flat again. And that's the worst of both worlds. They have no growth. And inflation, that's what we had in 71.
That's the worst possible.
Good God, I mean, that's the worst possible thing.
So,
not it. We just don't know how it's going to come out.
No, but I think that all one can do is the best that the moment judges, and I'm convinced that given all the factors at work, you're coming down with that. What I think, at least, is that the place that has the greatest probability of getting what we want, immediately getting what we want in the longer term, puts a little higher risk on what the longer term might be, but I think we can take so great an advantage of the short term, that we can use that to mitigate even the risk of the long term. And the short term effect would be that we regain the control of the process by the freeze, regain the initiative of what happens next, regain the opportunity to have our message be the one that the public listens to, not everything that's running around on all the news media. And then go do it and try to translate it back to the best possible program after 60 days. I certainly join in that view. I think George,
you had been out of the Western Coast and came back. That's what changed your mind.
When I left, the day I left for the West Coast, I spent most of Wednesday night not sleeping, thinking about this very subject. Even Thursday morning, I said to George Schultz, I'm going to go bend with you. This was even before anybody had taken this position. I went to Herb Stein and said, I guess I've got to go bend. So I changed my position Wednesday night over the night. Just thinking about it, I announced to George on Thursday that I'm abandoning his position on the subject. I told him that Thursday morning, even before this thing got started.
The point is that I need to abandon. We're not abandoning our principles. Journalists are starting to protect their mind. What we're doing is simply recognizing a very top political fact. And frankly, isn't people say, well, it's an old Watergate. Not Watergate. Believe me, this is the main issue in the minds of the people. Because they have a turn.
And, okay, I think George was joining in doing this. I think he felt a little bad. I felt a little bad. In the very moment when I wrote to you, and I gave it to George to send with the rest of it, but is only hope is this I can,
we can get our hands on people ourselves. Larry will be in sales, Katie, and he can really help get that field control, but that's such an honor in this room. I feel a little bad that George would be able to, in the middle of the night, without his hands, so that's part of the budget of government, you know, space, you know, for you. So, sometimes this would have any other thing going on, so we're not a bunch of trained seals around here, so. Well, as you know, I, economically, all option one, that is the all their option two. So, but not option two, it had started hard terms, which makes it impossible. But option two, with a freeze, a limited freeze, followed and indicating a follow-up order, and as close as possible, phase three, as we can get it, except for food.
Except for food. Could be some problems even with food. It's,
oh,
Peter Flanagan performed a very interesting little task, and I don't know if you've had the benefit of it yet. We've been listening to our Department of Agriculture tell us all the data they expect of food crops. Now, when we did economics, we go out and see what others view. But we haven't gone out to see what others view about planning, because then part of the all of this sort of thing, we've just taken our USDA information.
Mm-hmm.
Peter said, when do they go out and see what others think about the agricultural prospects? That was a very good idea. And he did.
Yeah.
One of the points is that USDA data probably comes down most optimistic of all. If we're going to go out and get others' views of the economy in general, let's get some others, and we did. So that's a slight warning sign that we should put up. The warning sign is that they may be, may have been a little optimistic for institutional purposes of their own, maybe. It's something to keep in mind, that there are other views of what the outlet for agriculture can be. Now, this wouldn't be across the board of all commodities. And there are data, Peter has the data around here, I don't know if it's too detailed for you to look at, but at least some of us will look at it. And it merely says, put up a little slight warning flag when you look at the agriculture data, as it may not be the center of the,
we don't have to write that bullet tomorrow night.
That's right.
I'm not going to put out any darkness predictions. I've got it in
there. Just be a little careful.
They earlier in the year, they were all coming to say, restaurants in March, I'm not sure if you can predict food prices. The prices will start, food prices will see some relief in the summer. Boy, I didn't think that.
Well, we're not going to see it. It's a little easy, even now.
On the fall,
although some products are good. I think we ought to get to your hands something now that's distilled out of this, that takes it by major crop, at least, and says, watch it on this one, and that one we're probably okay on.
Yeah.
That was a good input. And, food is still going to be a problem.
And particularly, let me tell you what's important. Your advantage is that there's a switch, heck of a lot there, boom, inflation, boom, recession.
And this is what we need to make sure people understand, is that they're pretty darn good, and they better realize.
I don't want to rewrite graph personal, they start with the upbeat side. We're doing very well.
Yeah.
We're the best fed people in the world. We're the best clothes, the best cows, and we have the highest wages, greatest wealth. And this is weird.
It's good.
This is America. Now, as we have a problem, the problem is an inflation, the problem is this area. We've got to deal with the problem. So I am recommending to this guy that we're taking these actions to deal with the problem.
Let me bring up another subject that we'll be up to you right soon here. The Congress, we had a very successful battle of the budget thrust, and we were able to so condition the veto, or the term of condition the Congress, and we got the first two bills vetoed, and we kind of had them on the run. And now they got us on the run. Now, sending back things, we're going to spend a lot of money. Now, what are the options? A number of these that consistent with the fundamental policies that you've taken in the last few months on taxes, on certain policies, even as to specific kinds of categorical programs that are foolish and should be eliminated on. They're trying to override all those and reinstate the olden days with a series of bills. Now, what happens? You're faced with veto or something. If you veto, there is a fair probability that some of them will be overridden. Now, the key question here is, on what scorecard do you want to be counted? Is it the scorecard of whether you change your position and thus are not perceived as having an overridden veto, or alternatively, you hold your position and maybe lose on the Hill, but win with the people? Now, this is really the decision that's coming right up. I'm trying to reduce it to a legal piece of paper.
I got it.
But I think that the scorecard can't be just who wins or who loses on the Hill. The scorecard is who wins with the people. Because if, in order to win with the Hill, you have to give up some very fundamental principles,
yeah,
you may win the vote, you'll lose the Hill. Governor of this was New Hampshire, wasn't it, who really faced this same issue, vetoed 250 bills and got a resounding public support, even though many of his vetoes were overridden. In effect, he played the battle for the bigger game, the game with the people.
I'm glad
and he won it. Because today, you're being faced today with, and will be, with a number of decisions to be made in the next few days and weeks of what position to take on this one and that one and the other one. And there will be entreaties to sign it or otherwise go along so it's not to be perceived as losing the battle with the Hill. Now, some of these are tough, and some of them you may have to, each one has to be taken for itself, but I'm really bringing up the point. That isn't the only scorecard to be judged by. There's a higher order scorecard than that, and it's the scorecard of winning on the fundamental principles.
In what areas?
They're
health,
health, education,
and
a great extent in that. Weinberger would take mine. Quite properly so, Bill Simmons would take the opposite. Quite properly, because he's charged with fighting the battle. I'm really saying there's a war. And he's the general in charge of that battle, and in order to win his battle, the scorecard on the Hill, he will take that position. He's okay. That's right for him to take. But I'm saying that there are more than
top people say that we're right to be doing
But you've got fundamental principles that in the minds of the people, taxes are one. Certain fundamental policy positions on some of these
also, we have to go to the tax increases we may have sometime. You've got to go in and be there rather than us here.
Now, what they're trying to do up there is simple. Add a lot of money on these and come down to defense. Figure out how much they need to come up with the 268 budget and is you who are writing taxes. You can't get fun of it either. So I'm trying to get this better understanding around here, but I'm really saying that when the issue comes in, don't be perceived as losing this one vote. There's a bigger war than that battle. And it doesn't mean that every single battle has to be.
You don't fight them all.
It means that you
do. For example, of a better thing I made. You have to have to. Have
that's
to,
right.
Have to dessert.
That's okay.
An education thing I made just be doing everything and get over it.
Absolutely. Don't feel that you must avoid every possible override in order to be perceived as winning the battle with the Hill. There's a bigger war of principle and of policy that has to be in mind.
I agree
too. I'm having a little difficulties inside of getting everybody to see this, but I think we're getting along. Al's joining, Al Higgs with me on that view of things. One by one, I'm getting
along. Well, I'll take a hard look at it, because I see exactly your point, but it's good that you emphasize it. And then when I look at the names at the bottom of the sheet, I can have in mind what everybody's thinking.
I don't suggest that everyone you could go down the line on the bigger one.
It's going to depend on the amount.
It's the amount.
That's philosophy.
And the particular issue. But it can't be that every single one goes the other way in order to not have a loss.
Never.
Well, okay. I just want to put that to
the problem with Harlow, this as well as him as Harlow, because that can lose their contract. And it's layered to
where you this stuff. Every cycle of the war has some managers in charge of battles.
Yeah.
And each battle manager is in charge of winning his.
That's right.
You're in charge of war. And one has to look at the war as well. And I don't want to be in charge of just saving money all the time either.
No.
I'm very kind of right above that.
I would like to be very generous to the schools and hospitals and the old folks and the blacks. We went all over.
Sure.
And Because I like to take care of everybody, so nobody had to work. Of course, I would be good.
But there's a war as well as a bunch of battles, and that's really what I'm saying. Well, okay, that's it. I keep pointing.
Honestly, today, I'm saying with her, I'm gonna have, for your information, I had made up my mind pretty much. And I'm gonna let them talk a little, yes, and I'm told to come up with what I call option three, which is a combination of one and two, in other words, it's one, the three, and so forth. You had stated on the freeze, the 60-day worry.
No, 60 days is okay. I would buy 60. I would not buy 90.
No.
I'd buy 60, I'd buy 50. In fact, I would look at the calendar and see exactly what economic data come in that we'll have to benefit from. Where's the Congress saying in session? I would take that period that is between 45 and 70, and now look ahead and say what's going to happen on July the 31st, August the 1st or 2nd, and fit it around what specific things, what new data we have, whether it is important or not important that Congress be or not be in session when the next phase goes in. But I would be right around the 45 to 60. 45 to 60.
I'm taking the terms right of if we're going to do the break, something we don't think we ought to do the right, and so we better have long enough so that people think it's meaningful.
Yeah.
And short enough, however, that it doesn't.
That's right.
That's too great.
That's exactly.
Now, there's our problem. That's why
45,
30 days just won't do it.
No.
Yeah, 30 days sounds like a nut.
45 to 60 is okay. July 31st, August the 1st, August the 10th, we're right in that range. And within that range of the 45 to 60, I pick the date on the calendar that fits other events that will be going on at that time, so that it will unfold when the stars are right. I'm not sure when economic data come in, but for instance, if it's the day after we have some significant economic data, or two days after, I would buy 45 to 60, fitted to specifics. Maybe 60 fits. I just haven't checked the calendar.
60 would be, August 13th.
August 12th. Maybe August the 15th, that's interesting, right? That's kind of symbolic, at least. August the 15th.
Any figures, get the whole sort of index tomorrow, I suppose. But there isn't, we sure don't understand the kind of thing. We've got to have certainty afterwards, and that certainty must be declared in the speech.
As certain as you can, keeping slight options open so that you're not absolutely frozen.
Right.
But at least enough so that you don't have apprehension and uncertainty that itself is a sweat.
Right.
But not so tight that you can't wiggle a bit. I would agree. A bit of wiggling room, but at least a general idea.
So that basically you don't have the moment you declare it as speculation begins what follows.
Yeah.
I don't want too much speculation on that because that will also escalate this thing. But I get your point.
I take out the numerical, some of the key numerical things that follow. For instance, will the 1.5 or 1% be the numbers that determine that, what do they call that, the kind of that total, that overall pricing thing? I forgot the term of it. But I worry about the precise number, but that doesn't mean that there can't be. Certainly the idea of what the program will be, the specific description of what the program will be, and even maybe some reference to number ranges, but to pre-specify it'll be exactly 1.5%, which may be a little too tight. That's just my view. Use that attention to do something, to sell. We're capable of this. It's only been proven this organization can really go on a great sales. Benjamin Weston. And this is the time to boast that somebody should be in charge of orchestrated program design. But there's a system that's very well geared to do that. What product is they sell? Where they sell it? What, how they sell it? It should be out there sold with a lot of enthusiasm, not just described, but sold with thin vigor, so that people believe it. We're not just educating, we're conditioning. We're not going to try to educate people in economics, but we are going to cause them to reach certain conclusions, whether they understand how they got there or not, is irrelevant. Put the conclusions in their heads, not the education in their heads by which they arrive at their own conclusion. I think a key part that has to start with the part that you can personally play would be the most important part, and then fall down to the rest of us and what we can do after that.
Give it everything
you can, play the campaign. It's like John characterized it very properly, I thought, when he said it's a bit of campaign. It has a lot of that too, on a special subject. Which subject reaches out, but it includes a number of other things as well.
Well, you know, it's unfortunate that you had to come into government and join us at a time that we had this miserable business on Watergate and all the rest. But we'll survive.
I'm one of the least sensitive. Don't worry about me or therapy or anything. I don't need therapy.
I know that everybody around me has a sense that they don't God, what's the matter? Just an administration crooked and so forth, and the president. I'm in the position that when this, the president's council is going to dean go on next Friday or Monday or Tuesday, and he's going to say the president is with us. And all the, about two thirds lies, but I can't deny. And I just got to go right to it. If the fellow that gets immunity isn't discredited, I don't know who is. You know what I mean? That's a lie, isn't it?
This whole thing the urban here, Cox, at least in one thing, I suppose, make a statement that the urban community is a bad thing.
It is. What's trying to destroy is prosecutions. He knows that.
Sure. Well, he's partly getting on record that the
so-called
situation.
He said that he's never going to be again. Well, I say never. He is going to have a very difficult time convicting any of the people that have been already convicted in the urban areas and convicted in the press room. Good heavens, they can't get a fair trial. How can they?
You can't. It's almost impossible. But urban doesn't want to.
But we will survive. There's a group somewhere, faint hearts around it.
Well,
what this thing does is that if those who are faint hearts sort of drift away for a while, they'll see how the winds will shift. They're going to be there. But on the other hand, it deepens the support of your real friends. Strange that you guys are enormous on the mail.
I brought Red Eye Magnum. I was in California this last week, and Red Eye Magnum wanted me to personally come out to you, but on behalf of himself and his constituents, he's got a good job, his constituents. He said, just tell him we love it, we support him, that he's got a great bunch of people here right behind him. So he asked me to personally send you his view, and he's a nice old guy.